Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Hill. Kyle Mabry is at the controls this morning. This is a program that's on weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We try to mix it up with 10 different topics every week and give you an opportunity to call in with questions. You can catch up on programs you might have missed first time around by going to our website, or maybe there's some you might want to listen to again, or you can sign up for our podcast, any and all of that. It's WILL, Will. Illinois.edu. And in fact, we've just done a redesign of our website and it looks really nice. So if you haven't looked at it lately, you go there to the website and you can take a look at it. Will.illinois.edu. That's the place to go. Well, in this part of Focus 580, we're pleased once again to have with us as our guest, Dr. Lester Farner. He is a dermatologist at Christie Clinic in Champaign. So that means he's a doctor who deals with the skin. And this is an opportunity to ask questions about skin. I'm sure that we'll be talking about sun exposure and concerns there. And we always, whoever shows up during the summertime, we always talk about that. But, of course, other questions that people have about skin, you can give us a call. And I know he'll do his best to give you an answer. We need to keep in mind that, obviously, because he cannot see you, this makes it a little bit more difficult. So we can't diagnose over the phone. But we do these shows because it's an information resource, and it's an opportunity to ask questions, and so it can be a place to start. You got some basic questions, we'll give you some basic information. Then, obviously, if you have concerns, you're going to need to go to somebody who can see you, but this is a place that you can start. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you have questions, you can give us a call. Thanks very much.
Good morning. Thanks
for being here. We appreciate it. We already have somebody ready to go, so we will not make them wait.
Okay.
We'll get right to it. This Great. Is a caller in Lafayette and on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Doctor, can the skin react allergically, either rash or just general itch, against either the gluten in grains or the casein in dairy products?
You know, I don't know much about casein, but the answer is absolutely for gluten in wheat. There are two ways we see that happen. The most common is a disease called dermatitis herpetiformis, which, of course, is badly named like many other dermatology entities, has nothing to do with a herpes virus. But people who eat wheat gluten who have this disease develop an IgA antibody in their intestines, then travels to their skin, makes very itchy little bumps, typically elbows, knees, scalp, sometimes buttocks. And it takes a while to diagnose. Sometimes it looks like an ordinary eczema or you just itch. One of the hallmarks is an itching that is far outside what you'd expect to see for the amount of rash that you have.
Here's an odd twist to the question. Does the itch often form symmetrically on the body?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That's common. Mm-hmm. In DH. Also, some people with, it's a little rarer, but some people with gluten sensitivity develop a really diffuse, not little tiny bumps of itchy areas. And that's, I think I've only seen that once in 25
okay.
years. So.
What do you think, then, of the enzyme designed to help in digesting gluten?
Boy, that's one I don't know. Is there a nutritional supplement that
yes,
will...
Yes, there is.
Okay. You know, I haven't looked into that data. I doubt... I don't know. The people who've got to DH are very sensitive to even tiny amounts. So, you know, if they take a vitamin pill that's got a wheat gluten-derived capsule around it, that'll just trigger 6 months
there,
of it.
There, I guess we're getting into celiac.
But, I mean, it would make sense to try to design something like that. I don't have any information about how effective that might be in skin disease.
All right. Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Well, on again to another caller. This is someone here back where we are in Champaign, and it's line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things on the market that say they'll help with aging, they'll help with wrinkles, they'll help with that. Are any of them any better than the others? Are they all just a waste of money? Or if you pay $120 for them or $40 for them, is the $120 one any better?
Well, it's much better for whoever who's selling it.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
The $120 stuff is better for whoever is selling it, for sure, but I don't know how else to evaluate that. First of all, there is one category of medicines that really does help with photoaging, and that's the whole retinoids family of medicines.
So okay, is that only with the prescription?
Yes, that's yes, with a caveat. You know, real Retin-A and the generics that spun off from that, and then there's Renova, and then there's one called Tazorac that's sold as I forget the name of the medicine that they've repackaged it and reformulated it, but the active ingredients all in the retinoid category. You can buy retinol, R-E-T-I-N-O-L. Which is in the Retin-A category, and it's not as powerful or potent as Retin-A, but, for example, Neutrogena, many of the different products that contain that, they're available without a prescription. It's not as effective, but also it's not as irritating and drying and not as hard to use. So that family for sure works.
So if you look for something with retinol in it,
it might make a difference.
Help a little different.
Yes.
A little different.
Yes.
But the price of the thing, I mean, they vary enormously in price.
Sure. They do. And you can go spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars and maybe not get what your money's worth. The vitamin C's don't have quite as convincing a science behind it. But the vitamin C topicals, if they're formulated well enough that the vitamin C sticks around and doesn't oxidize before it gets on your skin, that also helps.
Well, very interesting. Thank you for the information.
All right, thank you. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist from Christie Clinic in Urbana. In Champaign. Not yet in Urbana.
Yeah.
At Christie Clinic in Champaign, he's one of a number of local dermatologists that occasionally throughout the year is here to answer questions about skin problems, and we're happy to have him. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here's something I wanted to ask you about. And interestingly enough, occasionally on various shows, a certain topic keeps coming up.
Right.
Lately, we've had some questions about vitamin D.
Oh, you bet.
And apparently, there is some concern about whether or not people are getting enough.
Right.
And the thing that I wanted to try and get nailed down here was, how much vitamin D people get through their skin and how much routine sun exposure would a person have to get their, say, right. the average amount that they're supposed to have, say, in a week?
Right. Well, 15 to 30 minutes a day of being outside in the sun is going to give you enough vitamin D. Okay. So you don't have to be out at Six Flags for 8 hours and get a sunburn in order to get enough vitamin D. Of course, some of that is quite dependent on how covered up you are. So if you spend half an hour outside in January around here with your parka and everything else, you're not going to get enough vitamin D that way. Obviously, we supplement our milk products with vitamin D. There is a full dose of your daily requirement of vitamin D in most multiple daily vitamins, whatever brand. So if you took a vitamin D pill every day, a multiple vitamin pill every day, then you should have enough, as well as drinking milk that has been supplemented through the commercial stuff. Obviously, you buy, unprocessed milk for the reasons people would do that. You're not going to have vitamin D added to that. Hmm. And I don't tell my people to live in a basement, and I don't tell them that they should live, entirely on video games and go out after 9 o'clock at night. I think people should get some time outside during the course of the day. It's a pretty good life out there.
Does sunscreen interfere with absorption of vitamin D?
The question is, does sunscreen interfere with the creation of vitamin D?
Because it's
actually manufactured in your skin. It's a complex process of, your liver does something, and then it gets out to your skin, and then the ultraviolet light changes it, and then it's back in your bloodstream, and it does its vitamin D thing. Now, it's almost impossible to do a good enough job with sunscreen to interfere with that process. Okay. It rinses off. It sweats off. You don't cover yourself completely. So,
given, as you said, if all it takes is 15 minutes of sun exposure per day
right.
to have it to have your body do the thing make the vitamin D. You'd figure that it doesn't really you don't have to spend all that much time outside figure to get 15 minutes.
Right. And I go out. I'll admit on the air, I don't like putting sunscreen on. I just don't enjoy the process. So I'll put it on if I'm going to be outside for a prolonged period of time. I don't carry a parasol. I put it inside my ears. I don't like treating skin cancers in all those folds on ears, and it's just kind of scary to me. So I make sure I put it on there and on my face, and sure, I treat my hands and arms some.
Yeah. Well, that's I don't know, how many people to what extent they have taken the advice about using sunscreen, and I imagine there's some kind of gender breakdown here. It's probably harder to sell this idea to guys, maybe particularly if you're talking about putting something on your face.
Yeah.
Particularly for guys,
right.
And you're looking for. You want to do the right thing, but also you don't really want to slather yourself up with a really greasy thing.
Right.
Is there what's a good choice?
Okay. That's a good question. I just didn't want to get into some gender crisis here. so really.
Oh, no. I wouldn't want to promote that.
I was terrified there for a second because, believe me, there are obsessional peoples of whatever gender. But if you just sort of want to grab and go and do things fast, here's what I suggest. Hands, arms, face, neck, back, all the big areas. I like the spray sunscreens just for the fast. And this is what the cross-country athletes, the marathon people, you buy Bullfrog spray, Kinesis spray. They sell it at Body and Soul. They sell it at all the places with the word Mart in their name. And you just spray it. It's an alcohol base. You rub it in real fast. And then you're done on the big expanses. As far as your face, there are a couple of brands of upgraded sunscreens now. Neutrogena makes one called Ultra Sheer, and it doesn't have that lotiony, dry feel. It has a nice dry feel to it. And Thelios is a brand. It's made by L'Oreal. Coppertone now makes one, and these block out the B, which is the rays that cause skin cancer and most photo aging, but it also blocks out the A rays for the whole duration that it stays on. Which is kind of new, and it helps prevent drug reactions and other photoaging phenomena. So that's what you use on your face.
Okay. So you want to make sure it does do both A and B.
You want
so
A and B
look
block.
On there.
Exactly.
It is – do you have problems with people who maybe have skin problems, acne particularly, that it can – it can aggravate that?
Yes, depending on how sticky and greasy and pasty they are. And actually, there's a lot of idiosyncrasy. Some people use one brand and it causes trouble. They're just going to have to sort of try, borrow our friends. If it gives trouble, put it down. But I haven't had much trouble with the way they rate these is they call them non-comedogenic, which is a Greek word saying it won't cause blackheads and whiteheads. It's a cumbersome word, but that's what people with acne reactions to these sorts of things and irritation should look for.
All right. We have some other callers here. Let's talk with them. First is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. It's good that you were talking about sunscreen. I had a particular question. I've been actually visiting a relative for vacation for the past two summers. She lives in Phoenix. And the first time I visited, I got like my SPF 30 and 40, whatever, out, put it on, was, pretty good by keeping up with it, and I would just burn. And she said her dermatologist told her down there that you need to really start out with a 15 because the 15 SPF actually absorbs better in the skin. Get that on 15, 20 minutes before you go out, and then put the higher stuff on. I actually did that, but I didn't put the higher stuff on. I just kept on putting on the 15, and on my next trip that I was out there, I never burned. I barely got a tan, and I was so much more comfortable just using the 15 but being consistent with it. Is there any, that's been my experience. Have you heard about maybe 15 being maybe a better base, than subsequent sunscreens?
Well, first of all, I can't make sense of that just with the information you gave. Were you in a sports setting where you might have been sweating it off, or swimming where it might have been rinsed off?
All things. I was hiking. I was swimming, running, the whole thing. And in both cases, so when I used just the 30, I burned. But when I used just the 15. I didn't.
Okay. It's interesting. The sunscreen rating system isn't a linear scale.
Okay.
So the difference. I'm going to make some numbers up. I'm close, but don't hold me to it. I might be a couple percent off. But let's say an SPF 15 blocks 92% of the ultraviolet B. That means that 30 blocks out 96%, and then all the other numbers higher than that, in order to get another 1%, they're going up to 50s and 75s, and nothing's going to block out 100.
Right.
So a 15 is a pretty darn effective sunscreen, and in fact, if I went out today and was going to spend all day out, and I put 15 on my left arm and 30 on my right, and I spent 4 hours outside without, you know, sweating or rinsing, you wouldn't be able to look clinically and tell which had a 15 or which a 30. So 30 is a great sunscreen, and if you're in a setting where it's coming off, frequent reapplication is absolutely key. So that's what was protecting you.
Oh, okay.
It's not the difference. Now, there's a small difference. I don't know how scientific we should get today, but if you do a biopsy on the 30 arm, you see normal skin, and if you do a biopsy on the 15 arm that I sat out there for 4 hours, you see a few cells that have gotten damaged from the sun rays. They're called sunburn cells. Mm-hmm. But even though there's no clinical sunburn, so just the few cells that are in a vulnerable cycle will run into trouble with the 15. So,
even if the 15 protects for UVA and UVB?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so the 30 is got some real science that says, yeah, you should use a 30. But you're not going to at least suffer and, you know, be sticking to the sheets the way you would with a 4 or a 2 or no sunscreen at all. So frequent application is really an important situation where you're swimming, perspiring, working, whatever.
Right. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, I'm sure that some folks, particularly people who are really fair-skinned, think, okay, what I really want is the high-octane sunscreen, so
sure.
I'm going to go buy the
right.
highest
75,
number.
Whatever number you can find. Right.
So it sounds like that maybe that – and I don't know if that means that's going to be a lot more expensive, so that if a 15 is going to cost you less than a – whatever the highest number that you can find is. But it sounds like it doesn't – maybe – it's not quite as critical as – putting it on in the first place,
right,
and then frequently, you know, if you are sweating,
right,
you know, putting
and getting adequate coverage, because if you buy your little 4 ounce bottle and it's $9.95 and you want to make that last for the whole summer, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to a beach in Australia, sunscreen's a commodity. So they've got a public dispenser, and they pour from a 5-gallon drum into the public dispenser, and you put on plenty of sunscreen because it's free, instead of everybody hoarding their little one that smells like a piña colada and don't touch my sunscreen. You got to put on enough of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the trade-off between the higher number is, you know, kind of – It's fun to have the higher number, but actually you're exactly right. Adequate coverage, frequent application, 15 or 30.
Yeah, that's interesting about Australia, and I guess that they really, as a matter of governmental policy, they have really made a big thing of making people aware of the issue of skin cancer, of a problem, and then saying to people, look, you got to do this. You're going to be outside. You got to wear a hat.
Right.
Wear your sunscreen.
Don't play high school sports if you're not wearing a hat. It's like, you know, wearing the wrong kind of cleats in a soccer game around here. They pull you out of the game. I wear a hat. I'm too cool to wear a hat. Oh, well, sit in the shade on the bench. You're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got, you know, just as we do, a skin cancer epidemic. Theirs is much worse than ours. They have, I've heard Australian and New Zealand dermatologists speak, and they point out that their sports activities are participatory, not spectator predominantly, so. They're outside.
Yeah. All right. Champagne is next. Line 2. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I recently read that, still continuing on the sunscreen concept here, that in Europe they have sunscreens that have more, that are more effective, that have more... I'm not even sure what the technical word is, but more chemicals in them.
Right.
And I'm just calling to see if this makes a big difference and if we need to be having more approval from the FDA.
You know, it's a great question. I'm not on the cutting edge of this one. I've seen patients who've brought them in. I sort of looked at it, and indeed they do have a slightly more effective sunscreen. And I forget the name. I should be an expert. Now I'm all embarrassed. But I refuse to smuggle things in and run into foul play with the FDA. But people who go to Europe are welcome to pick up their own sunscreen and bring it home. It will be approved sometime soon.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. But again, I guess going back to what you were saying before, it sounds like you can go down to the drugstore and get a good sunscreen.
You can get a great
sunscreen. The issue
is,
do you use it or not?
Right. It's like basic transportation, or you're going to get the Ferrari.
All right. Vermilion County is next, line four.
Hi. Some years ago, someone told me that if you are out in the sun a lot, you should be sure to get a sunscreen that has something called parasol or parcel.
Yes, sure.
Does that matter? And also, on this program, they were saying you should put a whole shot glass worth on each time.
Yes, yeah.
What do you think of all that?
That shot glass is the right amount for your hands, arms, face, scalp, neck, exposed to the shoulders. So, yeah. So that little bottle doesn't last all that long if you're putting it on properly. And the Parsol 1789 has another name now also. It's that as well as avobenzone, A-V-O-B-E-N-Z-O-N-E. So, and you will see that in all the A-block sunscreens, except those that are exclusively titanium and zinc. Those are a different family.
Okay,
but that's out there. That's out there in big volume now.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So now, I'm going out to do yard work and going out to cut the grass or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm doing my thing. I put sunscreen on my arms. I put it on my neck. Put it on my face. Yeah. I put on a T-shirt and I go out.
Right.
Their stuff is still going to be going through my T-shirt.
Right.
Should I really put it on?
You should put it on your back and your shoulder. Sure. A damp T-shirt, let's assume it's a hot day in East Central Illinois, has an SPF of 2. And it's nice to see my farmer patients come in, and they're out, and it's in across the yoke of their shoulders. They're paler than the tan places otherwise, because that's where on your shirts, to make them last longer, they've got a double width of fabric there. So if you really want to be good, you go to Champagne Surplus and you buy their SPF clothes. This is not a commercial. And you buy your Tilly hat, which has got sunblock, and you wear sunblock. I like to put it from my nose and cheeks and ears down, because if you put it up on your forehead, your eyelids, you're going to sweat it down into your eyes, and then it's going to sting, and then you're not going to put sunscreen on next time. Right. So you buy it. You put on some sort of hat that protects your top of your head. And you wear some clothes that actually have sun protection rating. If you just like your own favorite shirt, you go to the grocery store aisle where the RIT people make their dyes, and you pick up their clothing sun protection chemical, and you throw it in the washing machine with your outdoor mowing the grass kind of shirts, and the sunscreen chemical then will adhere to your shirts for a few washings, and then you don't have to put on as much sunscreen or burn.
Okay. All right.
It's too complicated, isn't it? You used to be able to just
get pretty complicated.
Go outside and play basketball.
Yeah, but no more. No. Our guest this morning is Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist at Christie Clinic in Champaign and is here occasionally, and we talk about skin care. Whatever questions, naturally, when it's the summertime, we talk about the sun issue, but it could be anything else having to do with skin. You can give us a call, and he'll do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, as long as we're talking about skin cancer, let me just ask you to run down the basics of what should you be looking for on your skin? What would there be that you should say, if you saw such a thing, you should be concerned and want to go to your doctor and have somebody else look at it?
Right. How am I going to start this? Okay. So most people after age 50 shouldn't be getting new moles or growths and things like that, except for benign seborrheic keratoses, which come on in the zillions in some people. But if you get a new growth on your face, on your hands, on your arms, anything that doesn't heal, anything that bleeds readily when traumatized, those things need to be looked at. And I said over 50. I see plenty of skin cancers in people who are, 30, 35, 40, all there. around here, we don't see as many skin cancers, you know, in our 19 and 25-year-olds as far as basal and squamous cell carcinomas as you see in places like Florida and Texas and all that. You can, you know, it really is a time and duration situation, you know. The more time you spend outside, the more likelihood you're going to get a skin cancer. The pigmented lesions, some of them are a little bit sneaky, but anything that's irregular in its margins, very dark brown, black, asymmetric, does not have to be elevated. You know, people say, oh, this is just a little flat thing. Don't worry about it. This mole that sticks up, they're worried about that. I like to, you know, if you find a melanoma when it's flat, it's much more likely to be in the curable realm than in the realm than if you let it get thick and lumpy and, you know, size of an egg yolk.
Mm-hmm. I would guess, although this may be not true, I would guess that if I ask the question, where is the most likely place for someone to have a skin cancer, would it in fact be on their face?
Basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas are on sun-exposed skin, the places where you have gotten frequent tans, frequent burns. So, yes, nose, ears, cheeks, forehead, scalp, you know, hands, arms, neck, stuff like that.
Yeah, totally.
Melanomas are much more widely distributed and not in a sun exposure distribution. So they're much more evenly distributed across the body, which is one reason we spent so long figuring out that they are indeed caused by sun exposure. They figured this out in Australia because of their high rate of melanomas. They found out that if you had emigrated to Australia after age 10, you were much less likely to develop a melanoma later in your life than if you were born there and had one of those horrifyingly bad, memorable sunburns. So they think it's a several-hit phenomenon, such that when you're a kid, you get nailed with a horrible sunburn, you get some DNA damage, and it just sits there over the course of the next 10, 20, 30 years, and then up comes the melanoma later. And it's not necessarily even where you had the sunburn.
Yeah. So again, that says to parents, you really got to be careful with your kids getting how much sun they get.
Yeah. I was gratified. We went somewhere sunny not too long ago, and lots of the littlish kids, you know, 3, 5, 7-year-old kids were wearing bathing costumes, you know, like the frog skins and playing in the surf with the outfit because you wear so much less sunscreen that way and you're not going to get a burn all over your back and shoulders.
Yeah. All right. Other calls here. We'll go to Savoy. This is the next caller and it's line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Yes, our son, who's now 39, was born with a very large dark mole just below his knee. And all these years, he's never done anything about it, and I'm wondering if it should be looked at. He won't let me look at it because I keep telling him you should have that looked at by a dermatologist and see if it should come off before it becomes a problem. But he doesn't wear shorts, and he stays out of the sun a lot, so I don't know if it's a problem and I should be concerned. But it was a big one, about the size of my thumbnail.
Okay, so maybe the size of a quarter, maybe a little...
Oh, not that big. Okay. I'd say it was the size of maybe for a little baby it looked big.
Right.
It looked like the size of a nickel, maybe, or between a dime and a nickel when he was a baby, but bigger than just your regular freckle by quite a lot.
Okay. And it was there the very day he was born?
Yes, he was born with it.
Okay. Well, those are pretty common. There's about 1% of the children who are born who have got a so-called congenital nevocellular nevus, a brown mole that's there the day you're born. And they have some malignant potential, but we don't know the number. You know, I can't make up whether it's 1 out of 3,000 or 1 out of 6,000, but it's not 1 out of 100. It's not 1 out of 300 for sure. So, because I see people who are 50 and 70, and you can tell, or they will tell you that this is a mole that they've had their whole lives. Sure, they occasionally develop melanoma within them. He's got to look at it occasionally himself and doesn't sound like he's interested in showing
it. I think he does do that. He just won't let me look at it.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I'm a guy. I can understand
right.
that. I don't force people to have them off as long as they're appropriate and vigilant and have access to health care if he's going to see it, if it changes. But sometimes some people want them off and it's appropriate to get them off. Knees are a tough place to work because every time he bends his leg, it's going to want to pull his stitches apart.
Sure. If he just keeps it out of the sun, will that be less inclined to develop into a melanoma?
Yes. Yes, it will.
Okay. Would that be on his whole body or just keep his leg where it is covered?
Just his leg.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Line two is our next caller. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I think my question might be a little bit related to the previous two, again, from a parent. I have a four-year-old who has a brown flat kind of spot on his foot, and he was born with it there, but it's gotten larger, significantly larger and darker over the last year or so, and I was wondering if it's something that I need to worry about. Do such things tend to change in young children?
Well, you know, he's gotten bigger. His foot's gotten bigger, so the mole itself is going to get bigger, generally about at the same pace with him. And, again, feet are a little bit of a tough place to work. So I generally don't advocate that a mole in that location be taken off.
Okay, this is something it's flat. It's not raised at all.
Okay.
You still call it a mole? I always sort of considered it a birthmark.
Right.
But, I said, it's changed, so it seems...
What hue of brown would you say? I mean,
he's a darker complected child because his father, he's half Indian, but it's much darker than that. It's a very dark brown.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say black, but it's a very dark brown.
Okay. Yeah, I still don't worry about it. The interesting thing is that, I got two interesting facts for you. One is that the rate of melanoma in children 15 and under is 1 in 1,000,000. And that includes, you know, all comers.
Mm-hmm.
And the rate, and I'm assuming you mean subcontinent of India.
Yes.
Okay. So the more pigment you have, the less likely you are to have a melanoma. So pigmentation is truly a protective element.
I see.
So
you say that the change in size is probably simply due to him growing,
exactly.
And you would expect it to expand?
That's correct.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, then let me ask you this question then. People who have a darker skin, do they also have to be concerned about dangers of sun exposure?
Yes. Couple reasons. Number one, even if you have relatively dark pigmentation, you can still get sun-induced problems with drug reactions, for example. If you have one of those medicines that they say, watch out, be careful, don't go out in the sun. If you're on this medicine, sure enough, you can still get photo drug reactions. You still, of course, can get photoaging phenomenon. If you've got dark pigment and you spend a lot of time outside, you're going to darken up too. You will indeed tan more. So if you've got concerns about the uniformity of your pigmentation and you want to avoid that, then you stay out. If you've got places where you have scarred or otherwise lost pigmentation, you can run into skin cancers there. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But generally, the darker your skin, the more protected you are, as long as you haven't, you know, had a burn and then you get a skin cancer where you've burned your pigment off. What else is to say about this? Oh, African Americans, who many of whom have had European blood in them too and hence are lighter, can also get skin cancer. You have to, you know, doctors shouldn't just say, oh, well, they can't get a skin cancer because they've somehow decided that the person's African American. You have to look and evaluate and sometimes do biopsies because you just got to be vigilant. This is, you know, medicine isn't statistics. And even though that 1 in 1,000,000 rate is there for children under 15 with melanomas, and I haven't seen, you know, 3 million kids, I've seen 3 melanomas in children. One was 7, one was 11, the other one was 5.
Yeah.
So it happens.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with our guest, Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist at Christie Clinic in Champaign. Skin questions, what we're doing here this morning, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Up next is Champaign, line 3.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I inherited from my mother, who died at the ripe old age of 48 from melanoma, exactly the right kind of skin to get that. So I stay out of the sun like a vampire. I want to go back to the question about your comments about clothing. Tell me what you think. I typically don't wear sunscreen because I frequently always have on, especially in midsummer, a sleeved T-shirt with a long sleeve shirt over it, fairly lightly colored, and then often bib overalls and a full hat and so forth. Would you recommend that I go and get the RIT compound you spoke of and wash the at least my shirts anyway in them and so on and so forth?
Well, do you tan or burn through that ever at all?
No.
Never pink up, never get a little...
No.
Yeah. Do you make any pigment? You know, some people really, you know, they can turn pink and burn, but they can't really tan. Are you a redhead? You're a platinum blonde?
No, light haired. My mother was a redhead.
Gotcha.
And so on and so forth. If I am exposed to the sun, I will burn.
Okay. But, honestly, it sounds like what you're doing is pretty darn effective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fabulous. So if you're not burning through two shirts and bib overalls and you wear a big hat, I think you're doing
not only that, if I know I'm going to be out in the open where there's no shade around anywhere, I carry an umbrella. So, which I know gives the natives around here a lot of laughs when they see me walking down the street on a hot summer's day with a hat, full bib overalls, long sleeve shirt, and an umbrella on. But
tell you what,
I think to them, well, the heck with you. What do you know?
So, survival counts, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
To next, Terre Haute, line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I want to know, would you help me about fungus? They tell me I have a little fungus on the foot, on the toes.
Sure. Is it under your toenails also or not?
No. Well, I had one toenail was infected. He took it off. But the other foot has one on one toe and the other has on two toes of fungus. And there's no itching, no, I can't even see anything. And I was wondering what I could do about that.
Okay. Do you have any diabetes?
No.
You don't have diabetes?
No.
And you have good sensation in your feet then?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, fungus is on feet is serious if you've got diabetes. It's often a nuisance otherwise if you don't. But I think you should treat it. The only way to treat nail infections with a serious option of working is with some pills. And the pills are somewhat expensive. They've gone generic recently. They also can interfere with other medicines. They've got some liver side effects, so you need blood tests. So if you're not really troubled by this, I like using topical cream medications, and you can just put them on once or twice a day. And there are some good prescription ones, and there's some really good non-prescription ones. And if you're flexible enough to get down and put some cream on your feet, I think that's a great way to go about it.
Well, what brand?
Well, if you're buying non-prescription, I would buy Lamisil. Lamisil. Yeah. Sorry.
I thought that was just for itching.
No, that particular cream was developed to fight fungus infections.
And you can get that on the counter.
That's
now.
Exactly right.
One more question real quick. My husband has a sweating problem at night.
Sure.
He's asleep. He don't, you know, he's not awake, but he wakes up and he's wringing wet. And two or three times a night, and I was wondering, what causes that or what can we do?
Is that a new problem or an old problem?
No, it's quite a while.
Like his whole life?
No, no.
Just a couple years?
Yeah, 2-3 years.
Well, that's one where I think you need to take him to see the doctor and tell him about that. And the doctor ought to take it seriously because it can be a sign of some other problems. Obviously, unless you've got your bedroom at 85 degrees and you can explain it on that. But there are some other problems that you can have with your health that'll make one person perspire at night and the other person, you know, when it's not just the environment.
Well, he is under health medication, and he's had heart.
See, I worry about heart trouble in people who have lots of night sweating. I worry a little bit about some other infections and sometimes some other diseases, too.
So, and then he gets chilled, you know, when he gets cold and he's...
Yeah.
Has to change clothes.
Well, you need. Yeah, you better tell. You better tell your general doctor about that, because he needs a couple of tests done to make sure he doesn't have something serious. That's not. This is not one where you should just buy him a better antiperspirant or something.
No, no. What kind of test?
Well, he might need an X-ray, and he might need to have his heart and make sure that his heart's functioning as well as proper as possible. Maybe a blood test or two.
Then somebody said it might be the medication he's taking.
Could be. It really could be.
What is that name of that? What's the name of that medicine? Just a minute.
What? That medicine you think you're taking.
Well, thank you,
Doc. Okay. Well, it's probably, as the doctor here said, it's probably a good idea to get a checkup on that. Make sure everything's doing okay.
Right.
All right. We have some other callers here. We'll see if we can get everybody in and go next to somebody on cell phone. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have had a melanoma. In fact, I had it this September, and I have a redhead, so I'm sort of dead for it. I have been very good about putting sunscreen on my face, on my shoulders, on my upper body, but I don't ever think of, and I'm wondering if I should, my legs or my feet. Even when I'm out in the sun, unless I'm sitting for a long time, which I avoid, like if I'm just wearing shorts and doing errands and running around, should I be putting the sunscreen on that? If I go out and work in the yard, I do, but just for, like, running around.
Mm.
If I'm wearing sandals. They never change color. I don't ever get a burn, and obviously I never tan.
Right. Well, The default position is easy. I'll go say, well, you should put sunscreen on everywhere where you're going to be out. And then it's all on you to do that. But, you know, if you're in and out of the car and running into the store and then you're back out and then you're carrying the groceries in the house or those sorts of things, you're probably okay without doing a lot of sunscreen stuff. The melanoma is a real wake-up call, and obviously you're going to need to be seeing your doctor and doing your self-exams.
Right. But it was on my arms, which have lots of exposure.
Right.
My whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in fact, I was surprised it wasn't on my shoulders because I burned them every summer.
Yeah, they don't segregate that way to the places where you'd really necessarily expect them. Thank goodness, otherwise we'd all have no noses.
Right, true. Okay, well, so I probably, because like I said, when I go work out, I know I'm going to be out in the sun, I do put it on my legs, but just for running around, I'm probably okay. Because I do put a base on just for my running around.
Right.
I have Lubriderm, which has the SPF 15, and it just every day that goes on the upper body. I just never think of my legs. Well, thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana. This is line two. Hello.
Hello. I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One is regarding lawn mowing. I've had the practice in recent years of only mowing my lawn within and about an hour of sunset, and thinking that the low angle of the sun would be providing adequate protection. What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, if it's getting to be dusk, I think that you're pretty safe on that.
Second question is glass in modern automobiles. Does that provide adequate UV protection?
They do a pretty good job with UVB. You won't burn through the glass in your automobile. People who have photosensitivity disorders like lupus, certain other less common things than lupus, actually benefit from putting some clear plastic film that is an ultraviolet A block on the inside of their car windshields.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks. And I guess that is an opportunity, again, to remind people that the times of the day when the sun is with the rays are the most intense are the ones when the sun is the most directly
overhead.
So the times you really got to watch out are maybe like, I don't know, 11 to 3 or
exactly
something like that.
Right, yeah, 10 to 4 or 11 to, exactly. So if you're going to walk on the beach from 7 to 8:30 with a cup of coffee, that's great. When I do that, I don't put on sunblock. I'm a wild rebel.
That's the way we always think about you around here. Yeah. Wild rebel. But if you're and it's strolling down the beach at noon,
you then, wear, yeah, okay. wear your sunblock.
Yeah,
take right. a nap.
All right. Oh, good plan. Read a book. Line 3 is next in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I have a two-part question, part parenting and part dermatology. My daughter, up until a year ago, she's 7 now, would wear those full head to, you know, neck to ankle body suits that protect her from the sun.
Sure.
And now suddenly she decides she doesn't want it. In fact, she's at swim camp right now. Nice. Nobody else is, and evidently they think, quote, she's a boy. Any suggestions?
Ooh. You know.
And in fact, one time last year, I made her wear it, and she didn't swim that day.
Right. It's hard to. It's tough to be a parent and make your kids do what nobody else's parents are making them do. Then all I've got for that is sympathy. And I'll never show you the pictures of my kids when they were that age. They were brown as acorns, and you know, you have to let them be kids and fit in with their friends, and you just. Better yet, take them to some resort where everybody's wearing the frog skins.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And line 1, this is Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I just have a question about an aging skin. My dermatologist I saw some time ago, I would get bruising on my arms rather easily.
Yeah.
And I have found that using an Aveeno moisturizing lotion is twice a day, you know, before bed and then again after showering in the morning, is really helpful. And I was wondering if you had any other suggestions.
Ah, that's actually nice. I'll try to use it. So it's just the simple Aveeno moisturizer, nothing.
Right, it's just okay. Their Aveeno's moisturizing lotion, and Target has a generic brand that can save you a couple of bucks.
Great. It's a really common problem on the backs of hands and forearms.
Yeah,
that
forearms.
Just minor trauma will cause bleeding and little tiny micro bruises or even big bruises in there because the capillaries get brittle with the chronic sun exposure. Some of it, you know, as the skin gets thinner, it just becomes less flexible. You lose some of the chemicals that are actually sort of cushioning for trauma.
Okay.
And the fact that the moisturizers on there indeed will help make it a little bit more supple and flexible and maybe not, make it not crunch so much. So I'm glad you found a way to do it.
Okay, and I'll just keep using it then.
I think you'll have to. The other thing is obviously if you take aspirin, you know,
right.
That's going to be a problem or Plavix or the other.
Right, you take some aspirin. So
yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have a couple minutes left. Someone wants to call real quick. We can get them in. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. So is there any, have we done now sun and sunscreen? Is there anything we possibly have
see,
not?
We got in time of day. We got in A and B. We got in window glass. We got in reapplication. We got in the Parsol 1789 the lady brought up for the I think we got a lot of the sun stuff done.
Okay.
The big problem is it's so hard for people to self-diagnose skin cancers. When I'm in my wise guy mood and they say, well, what should I look for when I'm worried about having a skin cancer? I say, a dermatologist, you know. But there are lots of great pictures on webmd.com, and you can sort of try to self-diagnose with you know, please don't make yourself too anxious because it's tough to figure it out yourself. But it's really hard because I still see things that don't really follow the rules. You say, oh, that's no way that's a skin cancer, but we'll do a biopsy anyway. Sure enough, it is. The flip side's true also. So, yeah.
All right. Let's see. We'll get at least a couple more calls in here. We'll do Chicago, I believe, next, line number 4.
Thank
Hello.
You. I was wondering if there's any foods, particularly speaking of amino acids, that have been known to enhance or exacerbate cancer growth.
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. But I heard some comments mentioned about arginine and maybe tyrosin. So
yeah.
I heard that in the past that they have a potential for exacerbating. But
well, yeah.
All right. Now that this touches off a question in my mind, just to maybe remind people what we're talking about, photosensitivity, there are some prescription medications that you might get that will increase your
Oh, sure.
tendency to
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Have problems.
Some of the antibiotics, they always say this on the sulfa, ceftriaxone kind of drugs. Some birth control pills will do this occasionally. Some of the diuretics, hydrochlorothiazide is a common one, as well as some of the oral anti-hypoglycemics. You know, the diabetes medicines that, you know, not the insulin shots, but the pills.
And if these are prescription meds, they should
The pharmacists they're lucky. They've got these computer programs, and they put the stickers in the bottles. And people should be aware, and they get all the warning sheets. But, you know, and the good news is most people don't have photosensitivity. The ones I see are the tetracycline category antibiotics that I write as prescriptions for acne. You know, you don't want people coming to see the dermatologist then getting a sunburn because of me.
Mm-hmm. One more line here. Champagne. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm calling about my daughter. She has allergies, skin allergies, mm-hmm. and this summer has broken out on her midriff and under her arms and on her forearms. And she went in for allergy testing and found out she was allergic to practically everything, dust and cats and dogs. And the doctor said that when she had this, she broke out this eczema in order to clear it up, put her on cortisone. And as soon as she was done taking the cortisone, it came back.
Sure.
And she's done a lot of changes, like, washing her clothing now in hyperallergenic soap, and she got a dust cover for her mattress. But I wondered if it's advisable for her to go back on the cortisone. She's 23.
Sure. You know, allergies, unfortunately, are a long-term problem, and the oral cortisone, prednisone medicines are nice to bail you out out of problems. But I don't like having people have to take it all the time. So sounds like she's already making a good effort to do lifestyle changes. She should be on a chronic antihistamine routine. Is she on some of those?
I don't believe so. Like Sudafed or
no.
Benadryl?
Yeah,
or
like
what?
Claritin, Benadryl, Zyrtec. Okay. There are a bunch of prescription and non-prescription ones. Yeah, there are some that don't make you sleepy that you start with because you got to function in this world.
Okay.
But she should be on those and on the steroids just to bail her out in difficult times.
Okay. And is it okay to still use the cortisone cream?
Oh, you bet.
At some level?
Yes. Yeah. Now they come in, small, medium, and super potent, and she should make her allergist will know the right strengths.
And I'm sorry, I've got to jump in here. We're just at the end of the time. We got to finish up. Our thanks to our guest, Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist from Christie Clinic, Champaign.
Great. Thanks for having me here.